check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast. I am Drew Taylor, once again joined, as always, by Charles Tiberius Hood. How you doing, Charles?
I'm doing great, Drew. Thank you. My middle name is not Tiberius, but I appreciate your creativity.
What is your middle name?
It's actually... Do we need to get into this? It's
yeah, I think we do.
Spelled Roth, but it's pronounced Rote.
Okay. Is this a Scandinavian thing?
So anyway.
I think people want to know more about you.
And people might not know this, and maybe we can leave this a bit of a mystery, but your name is actually your middle name.
It's true. It's a nickname version of my middle name, which really confuses people. Security guards at every studio in Hollywood, absolutely furious with me.
I forget about it until we travel together. And then, you know, when we went to visit set Mission Impossible, and then you get your passport out, and I'm like, oh, that's right. Your name's not true.
I got to keep it mysterious, you know.
It's nice. Okay.
But I'll tell you who's not mysterious, Charles, is our guest, Michael Kaplan. And I'll tell you why. Because this man has done so many amazing costumes throughout the years.
Iconic.
If you don't know him, you should. And should we tell people what he's done before?
Yeah. Let people know why. I mean, it's an incredible body of work.
It really is astounding. We talked to him because he did the costumes for a little film called Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, obviously. But he has done everything. His first movie, Charles, was none other than Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
The original Blade Runner, yes.
The original Blade Runner. He did Flashdance. He worked with Bruckheimer on a lot of things. He did Clue, which we will talk about on our other miniseries.
Yeah.
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, Malice, The Long Kiss Goodnight, The Game, Fight Club, Panic Room. I mean, do I need to go on? I think I should. Star Trek 2009. The Last Jedi.
And
I mean, come on.
Every time you mention one of these titles, my mind immediately goes to some of the incredible costumes that are in the movies.
Right.
And it's just, he's done incredible. Somehow has never been nominated for an Oscar, which is insane. And he deserves multiple wins for these credits. And I just loved talking with him. We spoke with him back in early 2020. This was in person. And it was such a lovely chat. He's so great. And he brought along concept art, which we look at, I think, a little bit during the chat. And we talk about a lot of these movies during the conversation. It's great to hear him talk about all of these things. I mean, so many iconic costumes. I mean, you think about that Flashdance, the ripped sweatshirt over the shoulder thing. Like, it's unbelievable.
Well, he also brought like swatches of fabric and things, too. It was really incredible.
Yeah. Oh, it was so great. We really need to get more costume designers on this show. So we're going to have to do that.
I agree.
Because Mission Impossible has had some amazing costume designers. And, you know, we always talk about Colleen Atwood, who is a legend, who did MI3. And we're going to try to get her at some point. And the others as well. Amazing other costume designers as well. Penny Rose and other people who did the other ones. It's just, amazing. Amazing. So anyway, should we get into this? We've been talking for too long.
I know we've been talking for too long, but Charles, before we go, I have to remind people that actually all 7 Mission Impossible movies are streaming right now on Paramount Plus. You can also get them on digital,
yes,
on DVD, on Blu-ray, and 4K UHD. So please check it out.
Yes.
Watch Michael's amazing costumes. We just lost also Tom Wilkinson. Another great reason to rewatch Ghost Protocol.
Yes.
Just throw it on and enjoy.
And this is when we found out about, we actually got to see the snow costumes from the scene that never got filmed that was going to open Ghost Protocol. We saw the Paula Patton in this, we saw Paul Patton in the snow costume that was going to be in the sequence. And so, yeah, we've got those pictures on our website, lightthefusepodcast.com. It should be linked from this episode. Yeah.
Seeing those photos really was a moment for us.
Yeah.
Because we are so obsessed with the sequence.
I know.
To see how tantalizingly close it got.
It's, yeah, man.
Anyway.
So, yeah.
Enjoy this episode. It's great. It's a great conversation with an absolutely legendary artist. And yeah, that's all there is to it.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being here, Michael. It's you've always been on the top of our list. So
you're actually our first costume designer.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're obviously fans of a lot of the costume designers, but you're top of our list. I mean, this
Colleen won't return our calls. No, I'm kidding.
She's a busy lady.
She is, yeah. We kind of touched on this earlier, but we wanted to start by asking you about that amazing pre-production photo of Tom at the top of the Dubai, about the top of the tower, and about how you were the one that suggested not to wear a suit, but just to go out there in jeans and a t-shirt. And where did the shoelessness come from? Was that you too?
Yes.
Okay. Did you talk about that?
I'm surprised you know that.
Well, we talked to David James, who took that photo, and he said that Tom was ready to go in the suit and that you told him, get out of the suit and put on something more casual. So where did that come from?
Well, Tom's, you know, a cool, sexy young guy. Not as young as he used to be, but who is? And I just thought, you know, being up there on top of, you know, a hotel in this kind of tuxedo would kind of make him look like, what's the name of the Vegas hotelier?
Wynn.
Yeah, I actually said that to Tom, and he looked at me kind of shocked that I said it. I said, you look like Steve Wynn, you know, in a tuxedo on top of a hotel. And so he said, okay, well, what do you think I should wear? And I said, well, I said, I think it would be really cool if you're just, you know, wearing t-shirts and jeans and barefoot. And he said, that sounds good. So, I don't know if a lot of people contradict Tom, but I kind of, you know, I think with age, you kind of just say what's on your mind. And if he didn't want to, you know, I mean, he was free to do it, whatever he wanted, of course. But I just thought it would be, you know, I thought he'd look better, just young and casual and, you know, like just showing up like that.
Yeah. Did you have any relationship with Mission Impossible, the TV show? Were you a fan of the show or the previous movies or anything like that?
I was a big fan of the show.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I've since done the costumes for Star Wars, and I also did the costumes for Star Trek. And I think of the three, I was like an avid viewer of Mission Impossible.
That's awesome.
Star Wars, you know, of course, I saw and loved, you know, the first three films. But I never saw them again and again the way, you know, diehard fans do. And also, I was never a Trekkie. In fact, when JJ asked me to do Star Trek, I said, no, I'm not the right person. And told my agent to send my regrets. And called back and said, well, would Michael just meet with me and discuss it? And as soon as we started talking and he laid out his plans and told me how he thought, you know, I was definitely the right person, even though I didn't think so. You know, I mean, he charmed me into doing it. And I'm really glad I did, because I think the thing that was keeping me from doing it was fear of the fan base and feeling I wouldn't do a good job. But JJ kind of, you know, is so kind of supportive and charming, and you know, he kind of is able to kind of paint the road for you, so that, you know, you can become as fearless as he seems.
Yeah. And so the show, did that inform at all? I mean, you said you're a fan of the old show. Did that inform at all what you brought to this project to Ghost Protocol?
I knew the characters so well, and I was just a big fan of it. And I don't think so. I think I did what I always do, no matter what the project is. If it's, something I did recently, which was The Alienist, which was a TV series, a limited series, and it was based on one of my favorite books. And it was 1896, about a serial killer, which is a far cry from a lot of the other things that I've done. But I approach every movie the same way. You know, a comedy like Christmas Vacation, I read the script and that becomes my Bible. And I try to illuminate what I've read and you know, get a mental picture while I'm reading it. And all these ideas, go through my head. And, I just try to make the characters come alive and dress them accordingly, so the script is the common denominator for every department head.
Right. That original script for Christmas Vacation, John Hughes is known for making very, very long scripts, and then they shoot a lot and then whittle it back a lot. Was that a really long script, that one? Do you recall?
I don't think so. I think it was pretty much what it was.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I loved kind of delineating some of the characters that were just, written on the page, but Cousin Eddie and some of the fun that I had with his costumes, like the dickie he wears,
yeah.
The costume he wears when he's emptying the shitter.
Shitter was full.
Yeah. Yeah, but he was such a he was just such a fun character to dress, and with who they cast. I just had so much fun with that, and
yeah.
all the characters.
So are you? So you love doing
comedies.
Yeah. So I wanted to also bring up, just while we're talking about comedies, quickly, Clue is one of my favorite movies as well. And you did the costumes for that. Those are, iconic characters to bring to life in a movie. Mrs. Peacock and all those amazing costumes.
Yeah, they're doing another one.
Yeah.
They're trying to get it off the ground.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
I would love to...
Do it again.
Really?
I mean, that cast for the original one and the way you dressed them.
Oh, Madeline Kahn and Eileen Brennan.
Michael McKean.
It was
everybody. Tim Curry.
Yeah.
There, Leslie Ann Warren. I mean, there are so many great people in that. And the way you had to make them in such distinct costumes, obviously, from the board game.
Did you know that that's when I first met Carrie Fisher, because she was cast as Miss Scarlet?
Really?
Yes. And we had this crazy fitting. She had everyone in hysterics. We didn't get very much done. But the production called me and told me that Miss Scarlet was being recast, and Carrie was... going to deal with some personal problems.
I
think that's why we had so much fun, because I think she was,
she was drinking at the time.
Not drinking.
Other things.
She talked about it in her book and stuff like that. Things. Yeah.
It's all been discussed. So I'm not telling secrets out of school.
Yeah.
But, she was amazing. And, I really was so sorry that I didn't have that opportunity to work with her. And then I, would go to birthday parties at her house. And oddly enough, as a costume designer, that was fascinating, because she lives in Edith Head's old house.
Oh.
She did.
Wow.
And then, of course, I had the great opportunity to work with her on Star Wars and go back to the house and do fittings and meet her mom. And, I really miss her a lot. She was, an amazing woman.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing. You did all three of the new trilogy.
Yeah. Yeah. JJ brought me on, and then I met with Kathy, and she okayed his choice. And halfway through episode 7, Kathy said, I guess she liked what I was doing, because she asked if I would stay on and do the other two. So that felt really, really great.
Was there any kind of difference in working relationship with Ryan or JJ? I mean, was that?
Very much so. But like I said, you know, as I use the script as kind of the Bible and kind of take my cues from that, I also, you know, didn't, you know, I kind of just moved on to the new director and his choices and his vision. And it was very different than JJ's, as, you know, as the movie shows. But he also wrote it. So as JJ did, you know, episode 7. So it's really nice to work with a writer director because there's no questions they can't answer, you know what I mean, about the script.
Right.
You know, Fincher was that way also, even though he wasn't always writing the projects he worked on. But you could ask him how much, you know, if you wanted to dress somebody appropriately and not make them, you know, look out of their income bracket, you could ask Fincher how much money this person has, and he would, you know, without missing a beat, tell you exactly what they earn, and you know, so you'd have a wow. complete picture. Yeah. So he's a very thought out guy.
Did you work with Trevorrow at all for 9? If you were there for all 3, no.
I met with him.
Okay.
And we had a few discussions, but it didn't go any further than that.
Right.
That was at his early days.
So it's your usual process. You read the script and you come up with some designs that you propose to the director and then adjust from there. Is that typically how it works?
I read the script and then after I have an idea, I usually then meet with the director and listen before I go on record with my ideas.
Back with more from Michael Kaplan after the break.
Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game, headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Well, let's talk about Ghost Protocol.
Yes.
We love this movie so much. This is the movie really got us started doing this podcast because we saw it together in New York at the IMAX theater, Lincoln Square. And we've been obsessed with the series ever since. There's so many
outfits
to talk about.
I want to ask about the Russia switcheroo from his captain's uniform to the like tourist look.
And the Bruce Springsteen shirt.
Yeah, and the Bruce Springsteen shirt. Did Bruce have to clear that shirt?
They had to clear it.
Okay.
That was my own t-shirt, which I still have.
What? You should have worn it.
But I am wearing it.
Yeah, you are. Were all those mechanics kind of built into the suit so he could tear it away and do the, you know, changeover and all that?
Yeah. They just told me that he had to, you know, make a quick change from that. So it was my idea to do it in a way where the clothes were, you know, the uniform was breakaway, and they just thought he would wear something underneath the uniform. And I said, well, why doesn't he just turn it inside out and we'll do this? It's much more interesting to have this. It's much more like the TV series where kind of an integral, you know, thought out idea, concept.
Right.
Well, and I love him tearing the stripes off the pants.
Yeah.
Like just, I mean, it's all just in all in the one shot. He's able to just kind of do those.
Yeah. And Tom, I think you know, I knew Tom would be able to do it because of the way his mind works. And he's so great at hitting, you know, marks and you know, doing things that are choreographed like that. And so, you know, he had to do it over and over again. And, you know, I don't think he ever got it wrong, you know, with the Velcro. And
yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah. I like that moment.
Yeah. It's great. You have the suit that he wears with the gloves. I think that maybe Chris Peck, the props guy, did he do the gloves? But did you do the suit that accompanies it?
Yeah. We worked together, okay. And the gloves were pretty high. And Tom wanted to wear a tank top. And once again, I opened my big mouth and said, "You're going to wear like kind of elbow length gloves with a tank top. You'll look like Holly Golightly." So suddenly I didn't hear about the tank top again.
But he got his tank top in the Russia scene.
Yeah. No, he looks great in a tank top. It was just with those gloves.
With the gloves.
It wasn't really...
You brought a box of amazing artifacts from this movie, and some of the sort of artwork has him in a full suit, like with a tie blowing in the wind.
With the gloves.
Yeah, with the gloves. Can you talk about the evolution of that as well?
I think he just had it in his mind to wear something more tech, you know? And I don't remember. You guys seem to know more about this movie than I do. I own it for like a year. But it could have been logistics, but I think maybe in an earlier draft, he was didn't have time to change.
Okay.
And then,
that makes sense.
Then it became something that he knew he had to do, and so he was prepared.
Right.
So I think that's what the reasoning was, why I had him initially drawn in a suit for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also thought it would be cool, but, you know, not very practical, you know, like...
It also must have been, would have been a pain in the ass, I'm sure, with continuity and everything, with the tie blowing 800 directions. Yeah.
We
should talk about Paula Patton's dress, which is amazing, that green dress. I feel like there have been some iconic dresses in the series.
Yes.
Colleen Atwood did one for Maggie Q. And you
That red dress that Colleen did.
Did that inform at all
I
this
wish
one?
I could take credit for it.
Did that inform, you know, did you have to think about that one and make sure you're doing something different from it? Or, I mean, why green? I mean, just any thoughts about that?
I like green a lot. I did the costumes for Burlesque, and I put Christina Aguilera wears this beautiful green dress that's kind of like an acid green, and Miss Scarlet wears like a teal green blue dress, and I don't know. I think it's an underused color, and so I also thought that this shade of green was so beautiful on Paula, and she was. I knew she was going to be in it a while, and I wanted it to be a really complimentary color, but I also wanted it to have a strong wow factor when you first see her, which I think it does.
Yeah.
Climbing out of that car.
Yeah. Well, it's such a great variety of costumes she gets to wear. I mean, I think the opening of the movie, she started with like a baseball cap, and like, you know, she's just has a really great variety of wardrobe in that movie.
When you put Tom in the hoodie, did you think, oh, this is going to be on every poster and everything? Because that became this like kind of iconic image associated with the movie.
Yeah.
You knew. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
it's
at a moment when he's kind of on the run and hiding out, and I wanted a hood, and rather than just put him in a hoodie, you know, I thought something leather was cool, and when I saw it on him with the hood up and the way it framed his face, I don't know if he's ever done that before.
I don't think he has.
I don't think so.
But I think there's one moment in Minority Report where he has a hooded sweatshirt.
That's right.
Yeah.
But it looks so great on him.
Yeah.
It framed his face so nicely. And the fact that it was, you know, not some cloth hoodie, but just some, you know, like a leather hoodie was very dramatic. And, you know, I thought it was a great look.
A lot of famous Michael Kaplan leather jackets.
Yeah.
You know when you see a Michael Kaplan leather jacket.
It's really when you look at your filmography. We were just talking about this before you got here. Like, they're like auteur directors and auteur cinematographers, but I think they're also auteur costume designers. And that's like, you can see this is Michael Kaplan, like Blade Runner, Seven, Fight Club, like there's all these iconic, you know, things. And Ghost Protocol has that same kind of feel to it with the leather. Do you have any? I mean, is that?
Do you wear a lot of leather?
Well, I never put leather on. You know, I'm always directed by the script, so it's not like I need to get a leather jacket in when I can. But you know, it just made a lot of sense that Tyler Durden would be wearing a leather jacket, and I thought, you know, dried blood color was a good choice for him. And you know, and Brad wears a really cool like leather car coat on. In the movie Seven that I did. And the reason I chose that shape of a jacket was so that it would go over his suit. You know, we wouldn't put him in a motorcycle jacket as a young rookie cop because he was required to wear, you know, as a detective, he needed to wear suits. But I wanted him, because of all the rain and everything, I wanted Morgan Freeman to wear the raincoat, and I didn't want them both running around in raincoats. And so, you know, I put Brad in a cool leather 60s car coat that he would have gotten at the thrift shop. And he also wore suits that there's a couple scenes where he gets up and he puts his shirt and tie on at the same time over his head as if he were putting a T-shirt on.
Right.
And that's how he thinks of clothes. He's only wearing a suit because he needs to, you know, because that's what the job requirements are.
Right.
But he still puts it on like, you know, like a T-shirt.
That's one of my favorite moments.
With the tie already tied.
Yeah, tie.
Well, he's got that hanger full of all the different ties that are already tied. Was that in the script or was that an idea you had?
It was all character driven.
That's such a great character
and
moment.
All the ties are kind of like different sports, like one's basketball, one's football, has little footballs on it. So it's kind of, you know, if you notice it, fine. If you don't notice it, fine. But it's just stuff that is my way of character developing.
We'll be back with more from Michael Kaplan after the break.
The wardrobe that you chose for Seven, to me, one of the best things about that movie is the dichotomy between those two characters, Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman. You just see it in their costumes. And that's, and the way that they approach everything. So it makes sense that it would be in their costumes as well between those characters.
Oh, you know, another good leather jacket, as you did, Long Kiss Goodnight. Gina Davis is when she becomes a badass.
Yeah.
She puts the tape over the bullet hole. Another great leather jacket. Had to interject with that.
Thank you. Nobody talks about that movie. I love Gina Davis.
Oh, we love that movie.
Rules.
That's a great, I mean, we're big Shane Black fans, so that's a great, we like that movie a lot.
She's great.
Please continue on your Seven. What are you going to say about Seven?
Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt differences.
Yeah, I don't remember. I lost my train of thought about it.
It's my fault. Shouldn't have brought up that.
Gina Davis.
I'm glad
you did.
God damn it.
Well, I like the hat that you have for Morgan Freeman and the trench coat that he's got. It's just like more of old school.
Yeah, old school. And then this young, rookie, you know, detective kind of coming in, and Morgan getting ready to retire. I just kind of love that. And I wanted to, you know, exemplify it in the clothes.
Yeah.
I love that scene when Brad asks Morgan if he wants a glass of wine, and he fills it to the brim. And Morgan's look is priceless. Do you remember that?
Yeah. It's amazing. I love that movie so much.
I know. Fincher's pretty brilliant. And also Brad ad-libs, and, you know, I don't know whose idea that filling up the wine glass like that was, but, you know.
Such a great
It's like a normal glass, too, right? It's not a wine glass.
I can't remember, but he fills it up to the top as though it were a beer, you know? And I remember when he's talking to Morgan. He said, I got this book about the Marquis de Sade.
Yeah. And then just, the character work in that movie.
Is this a Seven podcast?
It is a Seven. Okay. But so David Fincher, is there, like, working with him, he's it's actually similar to what we've heard about Tom Cruise, that Fincher really demands a lot out of the people who he works with. Like, he brings out the best in them, I would say.
I think so.
What was it like working with David Fincher?
I love working with directors who are visual. And I was spoiled very early on, not my first film, but when I did, you know, soon after, you know, I did Blade Runner with Ridley Scott. And that's kind of what confirmed that I made the right choice to be in the film industry, because you really saw the clothes. You really were inspired when Ridley came to the department and did just a, you know, which was infrequent, but he would do a few little sketches and inspire you, you know, for, you know, the next couple weeks to kind of, you know, take his ideas and expound upon them. And then, shortly after, well, my next film after that was Flashdance, and it was another Brit, Adrian Lyne, and they both came out of commercials, as did Fincher, well, music videos more than commercials, but both. So, you know, there was something about that type of director who would be telling stories visually as well as, you know, with the screenplay. And, you know, the details were very important, and they expected a lot from the designer. And so to be, you know, in that mindset and included in their work, you know, was so much more collaborative than a lot of other projects I've worked on, where the director just feels, well, you're doing the clothes and I'm directing it. And I'm, you know, there's something about, you know, being heard and you know, being appreciated for the details or ideas you're kind of coming up with outside of, you know, the basic job delineation. Right.
You bring up Flashdance, I should ask quickly, because there's iconic stuff in Flashdance as well. The shoulder, you know, she has her sweatshirt over her shoulder. I mean, was that was new, wasn't it? Was that something that you...
I didn't invent it, but, it, you know, once again, I read the script, and you have this lady welder who doesn't have a lot of money. She is wanting very much to become a classical or a dancer, going to, you know, ballet school or modern dance school, and she also reads fashion magazines. So the sweatshirt makes sense for her day job as a welder. I used to, when I was in art school, go to the Pennsylvania Ballet Company, which was right on the same campus where I was going to art school. And so I used to draw from ballerinas, maybe a little pretentious, kind of thinking I was a young Degas, but I would go to these classes and do these quick sketches. And I noticed all the dancers would, you know, want to keep their muscles warm. And so they wore a lot of sweat clothes and leg warmers, but they would cut them so that they would have, you know, maneuverability, and, you know, they'd stay warm, but they'd be, you know, cutting things so that they could, move. And so that's where that cut sweatshirt came from the world of dance and ballerinas. And also it made sense because it was more of a fashionable thing to do than just wearing, you know, a construction worker's sweatshirt.
Right.
So it made sense when she was reading her Italian Vogue during her lunch break that she would kind of do something, you know, have an eye or her mind thinking about what's going on in the world of fashion. So right. Combining those three different worlds, you know, that was the one garment that I thought she could afford that would make sense and indicate all those different worlds.
There's also an iconic moment in Flashdance where she takes off her bra underneath her shirt. Mm-hmm. Was that in the script, or where, you know, where did that come from?
I don't think it was in the script. I think it was something that Adrian said he wanted to do.
Right.
And, he said, she's going to, you know, come home and seduce him and put on something more comfortable. So rather than it be a bathrobe, I think the sweatshirt, I think it all just evolved on the set. I don't think it was in the script.
Yeah.
I don't remember. But, you know, the baggy sweatshirt really made it very easy for her to do that.
Yeah.
You know, that became the poster for the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people are still wearing the sweatshirt that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is it like to see?
A lot of the guys on Santa Monica Boulevard in West Hollywood started doing it. That, it really became a huge
Well, what is it like seeing something that you have designed go into the world, you know, sort of be absorbed by the culture like that, either, you know, people dressing like it for Halloween or even, you know, adopting it, like you said, just in the mainstream? Is there like a real sense of gratification there?
Yeah, it was on the cover of Newsweek. I mean, it was like insane.
Right.
Wow.
You know, and I had like a Japanese, I don't know if it was like a sportswear company asking if I would do a line and, you know,
wow.
You know, a lot of stuff going on. And it was like not only sweeping the nation, but I mean, it was, you know, a kind of a worldwide thing.
Right.
Which was pretty incredible.
I mean, you're still doing that, though. I mean, I see people at, you know, Comic-Con dressed like Laura Dern from Star Wars, and that's you. You know, it's like you still are putting that stuff out. I mean, is there a drive to kind of contribute to the culture like that, or is it just specifically for the movie and then whatever else happens?
Not at all. No, it's just for the movie, and it's kind of what I feel like I'm paid to do, and is to make these characters come alive in a way that makes sense. That's also something you haven't seen before, something fresh and correct for the script and yet not boring. And people have interviewed me for jobs and say, well, you know, with our film, we're trying to set a trend like you set on, you know, Flashdance.
Oh.
We'll be back with more from Michael Kaplan after the break.
You also are notable for surviving two Michael Bay productions. got to do a lot of fun space stuff in Armageddon, and you got to do a lot of, as Alec Baldwin calls them in the movie, hula shirts for Pearl Harbor, which are great. you have any good Bay stories?
Probably not that I can share here, but... I actually like Michael, and he's asked me to do a few of his Transformer movies, and I didn't do them. I turned them down because I didn't feel like there was a lot. He said, "Why won't you work with me?" You know, and I said, "He said, you know, are you angry at me?" And I said, "No, I kind of think you're pretty amazing. You know, you're a wonderful director, and." He can be really, really tough, and he was really tough on my crew, which I didn't like. But I would work with him again on the right project because
the script isn't right.
He's very talented, and I like working with talented people. And you know, I'm not really afraid of getting yelled at, although he's not really yelled at me. But I just didn't feel there was a lot I could bring to Transformers that was exciting for me. You know? Yeah. So.
Well, we have to briefly at least touch on your very first movie, speaking of robots, which was Blade Runner.
Not your first, but as a
credited costume designer, right?
No.
No?
Uh-uh.
IMDb is telling me differently. I mean, I know that you...
Can we correct it?
we can correct IMDb. Correct,
yeah. Yep. but obviously one of the most iconic.
The first movie I ever got a film credit on as costume designer was a movie called Can't Stop the Music, starring Bruce Jenner.
The Village People.
Valerie Perrine.
The Village People.
all of them. Yeah.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
That milk sequence is insane.
I didn't do that. There were like three costume designers on the movie. And
did you read the book about the producer? What's his name?
Alan Carr.
Yes.
I didn't need to read the book. Oh. I experienced the producer.
It's a fabulous book. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really have too much to say.
well, let's talk about Blade Runner.
That's why the movie's not on my resume. But it does now have such a cool factor that I think I might want to put it on my resume.
Yeah, I think you should. Embrace it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. In retrospect, at the time, the producer, whose name was Alan Carr, wanted everything to be super, super sexy. Mm-hmm. And he wanted Bruce Jenner, who was this amazing Olympiad, who, you know, was so handsome and, you know, had a beautiful, beautiful body. He wanted him to kind of be, in his mind, very sexy. And so he said, I want him in short cutoffs and let's show his stomach, you know, like in a midriff cutoff t-shirt. And I said, this guy is a jock. He's not going to wear that, Alan. You know, I mean, he said, trust me, he'll wear it. You know, like, I'll get him to wear it. If he does, if he gives you any trouble, just let me know. And I'll, you know, he's doing a movie and he's an actor and he's being paid. And so, you know, I will, you know, help you get him to wear what I have in mind. And so I put the outfit in Bruce's room. And he comes out happily wearing it with no discussion.
That's great.
A tease of things to come. I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The famous story with Blade Runner is that you wanted to put him in a hat. And he said, I just came back from Raiders. I'm not wearing a hat again.
He didn't say Raiders.
Oh, he didn't. Okay.
No, he said, I just wore a hat in for months in my last movie and I'm not wearing a hat. He doesn't like hats too much. And the film turned out to be Raiders. So it was kind of like the way he said it. And then when I saw the movie, I saw what he meant.
Yeah. You know?
So it was like a punchline months later when the movie came out.
Nice. But you had I guess that sort of fits with the whole noir aspect of him wearing a hat, right?
Well, the reason I think I got the job was when they were out to different costume designers, they all heard it was futuristic. And so I was like this kid. And for them to kind of come to me was because Ridley had seen a lot of established costume designers who talked to him about silver mylar spacesuits and, you know, like.
Yeah.
And so it was when I read it, I thought, you know, this is like a gumshoe. This is kind of like Sam Spade. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a film noir. And so I started thinking of, you know, all of Adrian's designs in the 30s and 40s and the kind of suits he did and you know, the Humphrey Bogart characters, Maltese Falcon. And it just kind of read like that. And that's kind of what Ridley was thinking. And so that's how they took me on. Well, first they called the union and they said, you know, is there anybody with, you know, a different viewpoint, anybody young in the union? Because he had met with a few people who were, I guess, quite older. I don't know who he was meeting with. And the woman who was the head of the union at that time said, well, our youngest member, you know, why don't you meet with him? You know, he's just gotten in and he just finished a film, which was Can't Stop the Music. And so we had our meeting and I was taken on. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Did you come back when they were, I know they reshot some things for, was it the final cut? The scene where Zora gets killed in the glass and all that. Did you come back and supervise those costumes or did they just put her in the same costume?
It was the same costume.
Oh, wow. It's pretty amazing she could fit. I mean, I don't think I could fit in something that I wore. That's amazing. But you weren't on set for any of that.
I don't. Oh, for the final cut?
Yeah,
years later?
Yeah,
yeah.
No, I wasn't around. I didn't do that.
They
just copied what we had done. But the I co-designed Blade Runner with Charles Knode.
Okay.
And so he was used to working with a partner. And so, but he didn't do the reshoots either.
I think they might have just pulled the costume. You know what I'm talking
about? No, the costume doesn't exist.
Oh, it doesn't exist.
No, I think they just had somebody come in and copy it.
Did you know when you were doing Blade Runner that it would be what it was? I mean, I know it didn't even have,
it didn't have
the initial reaction, but did you think people would come back to it the way they have?
Well, I went to dailies every single day, which I don't usually do, but I just, you know, was so blown away by the look of it. And it was so exciting, you know, to be working with Cronenweth and Ridley. And was, you know, wonderful being a part of that. And Charles Knode. And,
right.
You know, it was terrific.
Did they talk to you about coming back for the 2049?
No.
No? Okay.
No, I don't think I would have. I wouldn't have.
No.
Right.
No.
So you said
that was a beautiful, beautiful movie, but it didn't really kind of connect with the Blade Runner that I worked on.
Right.
It was a whole different film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you said you like to work with Cronenweth, and then you worked with Fincher, right? With Cronenweth's son.
Yes.
What was that like?
He was great. Very talented.
Yeah.
So I guess, I don't know if, I guess that's hereditary.
Well, getting back to Mission really quickly, I know we're running out of time. You showed us from your pre-production photos, we've heard about these and we've talked about it on the show a lot, the snow sequence. So you had these snow suits designed for them. They looked really amazing. Was it just Paula Patton who was in the snow, or were there other characters too?
I think Benji was supposed to be in the snow. I don't really remember. It's all foggy to me. I should ask you guys.
Well, with your permission, we're going to post that photo of Paula Patton. There's a couple different designs of her that she's wearing the costumes.
Yeah.
And they look amazing. They almost even have almost a slight superhero vibe to them. And one of them in particular, it's like almost like a cape. It's kind of awesome looking. I mean, were you disappointed that that sequence didn't end up coming to fruition?
No, things were... I'm kind of used to that. I can't really hold on to things. I remember doing a leopard dress for our lovely French actress.
Leah Seydoux.
Leah,
sorry.
Yeah. And Brad, I didn't know, hated leopard, or he just...
Oh.
So you can't become attached to things, you know? You have to just kind of let things go and... Because, you know, films are like that. They have a life of their own, and whether it's logistics or you know, weather or so many things, you know, things change on a daily basis.
Speaking of that, we wanted to know, we know that Vanessa Redgrave was being courted to come back.
She was.
Did you design things for her?
No.
Okay.
No, she said no pretty quickly.
Oh, she did. Okay. Because we'd heard that they had pushed her scenes to the end of shooting so that
they could
get more time to try to get her.
Yeah.
But no, you got to dress the fog instead. He was the
character's name.
That's the character's name.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the sunglasses in the movie? They're Persol's mostly. And then you have Oakley goggles for him to go outside.
Mm-hmm.
And those Oakleys were custom, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that and why Persol and was... Tom's worn a lot of Persol's throughout the years.
I love Persol's.
Me too.
Like, you know, I love their history, and I loved, they always seem like Italian movie star glasses mm-hmm. to me. And I'm not wearing them now, but, you know, I've had my fair share of beautiful Persol glasses. And, you know, the quality is really good, and the history is nice, and I just really like them. And I don't remember if... I usually like to, the Oakleys came through the prop man, I believe. But, you know, when an actor is wearing something, I usually work very closely with props.
Okay.
So on watches, and I like to be there when the actor's kind of looking at all the watches or sunglasses. And I like to... discuss with the prop man, you know, the feeling that I want to elicit mm-hmm. in elicit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really recall why Persol's, and I remember going to Oakley, and they're very accommodating in, mm-hmm. in doing things for Tom or for other actors and doing custom work. And so they're really easy and lovely to work with. So I think that's why the prop man wanted to go to them.
Nice.
And I think maybe Tom likes them also because he's used Oakley in the past.
Yeah. He used them in 2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Yeah.
The Hendrix suits. You said there's a pinstripe suit.
There's a pinstripe suit that wasn't in the movie, but is in the credit sequence from the scene where he's giving the monologue to himself. Do you remember this alternate opening?
No.
Okay. Well, there's an opening sequence where you think he's addressing like a hall of people, but he's just talking to himself.
Yes.
And that was the original opening of the movie. And he's got this great pinstripe, and it's not in the movie, but it's in the title sequence. Mm-hmm. So did you have any kind of like, what, yeah, what was the kind of character reason for that? Or
and the white suits, what kind of white suits, right? Yeah. Like, what was your thinking behind that?
Because he was in warm climates, tropical climates.
Okay. Is that a general rule you have for like if someone's in a warmer climate, you want to put them?
No, but it made sense here. And also you want to kind of give each actor their own kind of either color palette or feeling about them. And that just seemed, you know, seemed right for him, for his character.
Do you have to adjust the suits for Tom in any way to be able to
Dubai,
run?
I mean, you know, it's very hot. It just
seems. Yeah. Well, I mean, you have to adjust
in Mumbai.
They were in hot climates, but Tom wears this great, like, kind of silvery blue suit in Dubai, and then he runs for about 10 minutes through this city. Do you have to, I mean, does he just run in your suits? Are you reinforcing them or making them out of materials that allow him to run easier?
Is there a running version
of the suit? There is a running version, and it's made of different things.
It has different seams.
Okay.
Maybe elastic in the seams or not made out of different fabric.
Okay.
Tom says that that is his favorite suit that he's ever worn in any movie.
Wow.
It's a great suit.
Yeah.
It's that beautiful shade of blue and it's mohair, which is wool, but it breathes very nicely. So, you know, it's not too hot and it doesn't crease, which was what I was thinking about more than anything because he's in it so long. Tom has different clothes and different shoes for every situation, like for running and for climbing, and he's that specific. And so we were making his shoes, and then he has bigger shoes if he needs thicker socks, and he has shoes that are actually sneakers covered to look like the shoes that he wears in the rest of the scene. So for any given outfit, he might have actually, you know, a lot. It's a lot of work for his dresser to kind of make sure he's in the right thing for the right moment and the right stunt. And, you know, there's different size suits for different kinds of stunt pads, you know, but that's something we do for all actors when they're doing stunts. And then there's other suits for the actual stuntmen who that might be a different size and for their pads and different size, you know, if they have to wear knee pads. So the pants are cut differently for the knees. And so it's really specific. And because Tom is usually doing all of his own stunts, those provisions have to be made for him. So, you know, he might have, you know, like 40 different suits or something like that.
Wow.
You know, some for stunt doubles, some for photo doubles, for himself, for, you know, and then lots of shoes.
Did you take the suit home?
I'm sure he has one of them.
Okay.
Because, you know.
If he loved it. I mean, yeah. I would.
Did you do a Curtis Hanson movie?
Yes.
What was it like working with him?
It was a difficult movie. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. It's about the World Series of Poker.
Mm-hmm. Eric Bana.
Yeah.
Okay.
Eric Bana. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't, I don't think it turned out to be one of his great movies.
Right. I just didn't know if you had any stories about working with him and what he was like. Just a fan of his, that's all.
Yeah. he did good work.
Back with more from Michael Kaplan after the break.
Well, before we ask you for some important questions, we should ask about working with Brad Bird, because this was not only his first live action movie, but obviously a huge.
Besides not liking Leopard.
Besides not liking Leopard. But that's interesting because you say that, and there's a character in Incredibles that has almost Leopard pattern on the whole movie.
Well, that made sense for her. I don't know why. Maybe that's why he didn't want her Leia to wear Leopard or something like that.
But was it fun working with somebody with an animation background? I mean, there must be a lot of sort of similarities there in terms of.
He was a very sweet man. very kind of quiet. I know he loved doing crossword puzzles.
Now I know what to bring him the next time I see him.
Yeah.
He's the best.
Do you have a favorite actor or just an actor you just loved to dress?
Well, Brad and I have had, you know, Brad Pitt and I have had some, you know, wonderful collaborations on, you know, Seven and Mr. and Mrs. Smith and Fight Club and a lot of different photo sessions, one in which he was only wearing dresses.
Then you did that one?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. I just found one of those dresses in my storage space. So
going to the Academy?
No, that was in a magazine, and so I don't think the Academy would want that. It might go in the auction block.
Nice. Oh, okay. All right. You also worked on John Hughes' last film.
Curly Sue.
Yeah. Did you get the sense that he was packing it in, or?
No.
Okay.
No. I really liked John a lot. You know, I was very intimidated when I first started working with him, and then kind of as the film went on, you know, I would sit in a director's chair next to him and we'd have these long conversations. And I was so glad to get to know him, you know, on that film and realize that he was just quiet. He wasn't really, you know, a scary person, you know.
Right.
No, he was a lovely man. I really, really liked him a lot and very brilliant.
Another person gone too soon.
I know.
Yeah.
Do you remember what you would talk about? I mean, it was just everything, life,
about
music,
everything, maybe? About everything, about, you know, about the movie, about, you know, about music, about, yeah, Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a cool guy. And I really hung out a lot with Kelly Lynch.
Okay.
I still see her. I saw her a couple of weeks ago in a restaurant. I'm always running into Kelly and her husband, Mitch Glazer, in restaurants.
I heard Mitch Glazer told me the funniest story.
She's a terrific girl.
Well, he says that every time there's a movie with one of her sex scenes in it, he'll get a phone call from Bill Murray and he'll say, "Turn on the TV. Somebody's f***ing your wife." So I don't think I ever even published the story, but this was in it.
Mitch Glazer told you that?
Yes, he told me that. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it might have been Roadhouse specifically, like Swayze, turn on the TV, Swayze's f***ing your wife.
Bill Murray says that.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't have any of that in Curly Sue.
No. For 5 seconds, let's each bring up a favorite costume.
Oh gosh. Okay.
I already have mine locked and loaded if you want to go first.
How do I pick just one? Go ahead.
Okay. Snoke's disco robe in Star Wars The Last Jedi. Where did that come from? It's amazing. It's one of the most iconic pieces. My wife loves the Praetorian Guards, but I have to bring up the Snoke. Well, they're sort of all in the same
scene.
Yeah. So where did that come from?
I love the Praetorian Guards.
They're amazing.
Because the board, you know, I do mood boards, and I knew there would have to be Praetorian Guards, and I wanted them to be red, and you know, the director wanted them to be red. There was a lot of red in that film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of thought, well, what would they look like, you know? And I kept thinking about muscle cars. And then I kept thinking about samurai. And so I kind of took, you know, it was almost like one from column A, one from column B. And, you know, and I wanted them to kind of have this... Also kind of be related to the early Praetorian Guards or the early guards from the earlier movies. And so, you know, looking at everything together, they just kind of, you know, started doing sketches and putting all these elements together, hearts of muscle cars and the shine and I like the fact that you, couldn't see any humanity.
Yeah.
You know, and wasn't sure how we were going to do that, like two-way glass. But then we put these little tiny, tiny, tiny slits so that they could easily see out. And they needed a lot of vision because they had these huge weapons and they needed to fight.
Mm-hmm.
But they also needed to move. And so when you have a drawing and then you hand it over to the people who are actually building them, I mean, it was quite a feat for that department to actually build them so that they have full range of motion
right.
from a drawing, you know. But they look exactly like the drawing. And, you know, I grew very attached to them. I love them.
I think that's everyone's favorite scene. I mean, were you
beautiful?
Did you design Snoke's? Because there is no costume really for him physically. It's all on the computer. But did you design that?
We made a real costume because there was a moment when somebody actually had to wear it.
Oh, wow. So where did that gold disco vibe come from?
It was almost like gold leaf mm-hmm. on this very rough hewn fabric. Because I didn't want it to be slick. I wanted it to feel like Star Wars. And I wanted to have that like hand woven quality. And to get that nubbiness, you know, we made the robe first and then applied the, you know, the gold to it. But it wasn't paint. It was kind of like a gel that we laid on top, almost like gold leafing it.
It's an amazing outfit. Amazing scene. I think that's everybody's favorite scene from the new trilogy. Great. Yeah. All right, do you have your outfit picked up?
And then his arm gets cut off, and his arm is still sitting on still sitting on the throne chair, which I loved, with a ring on it.
And he kind of slumps over. Yeah.
And he had these, you know, matching gold shoes. There was something very papal about it, too.
Okay.
I mean, I feel like I brought up a lot of the costumes that I wanted to ask about, but I will bring up one that we haven't talked about, which is Will Smith in I Am Legend.
Uh-huh.
Which he also has that, again, I would say that Michael Kaplan
it's
look.
It's not leather, it's oil skin.
Oh, wow, okay. But it looks, I mean, it's gorgeous, it's awesome. I mean, it looks badass.
But it is a strong look, and it does feel like leather. I mean, it might as well be leather.
Yeah. I think that movie is the first hour and a half, 15 minutes of that movie is like perfect.
Years and years ago, Brad Pitt called me. I think it was probably 2010. So we had done Seven together and we had done Fight Club together. And he said he had been thinking a lot and would I be interested in doing a line of clothes with him? A very small line that would kind of maybe be influenced by the movies he's done, maybe be influenced by the way he liked to dress. I mean, it was a very loose concept. And I said, yeah, count me in. And I said, but doing a line of clothes is going to be, he said, we could have easily sold those Seven jackets and we could have easily merchandised a lot of the clothes from Fight Club. And, you know, I just did Ocean's 11 and there's clothes in that, you know, some of the shirts and ties. And he said, it would be so great. And I said, well, why don't we call Jeffrey Kurland who did, you know, I said, also, if we're doing a line, it might be nice to have designers you've worked with or designers you will work with so that no one person has to give up their career, you know, because the line is going to take. Mm-hmm. So I said, why don't we have like three costume designers do this line and we can, revolve it. Anyway.
Did that happen?
It was about to happen and 9/11 happened. And so, but Armani was going to produce it. And I mean, it had gone that far.
Wow. We were
about to have a meeting with Armani and 9/11 happened and, you know, the world changed radically. Yeah.
But that reminds me, I forgot. Actually, Brad Pitt designed or co-designed my wedding ring.
Really?
It was a ring that I think he had.
I remember that.
So I have the same
ring.
I forgot that Brad Pitt did that.
It's the one with the little...
Yeah, I'll show you.
Are there little...
Little diamonds inside of the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we ask everybody this, and I think you're actually going to really give us some good answers on the first question, which is, we would love you to rank Tom Cruise's hairstyles in the Mission Impossible movies. So he's had six hairstyles. Maybe you can just talk about your favorites. We've kind of been boiling it down. Are you a short hair guy, a long hair guy?
I always like Tom with longer hair. I think he has great hair. And I always like, you know, a few, you know, pieces hanging in his face. Mm-hmm. And he can always push it back. But it's nicer when it's longer because it has, you know, it moves and it has someplace to go. And he's always doing so much action that I kind of I think it just frames his face better also.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you got it, flaunt it.
Yeah, the hair in Ghost Protocol, too, is really nicely shaped. Mm-hmm. It's got a nice, yeah.
Yeah.
So first of all, have you seen all the Mission Impossible movies?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to rank them, or do you want to talk about maybe your top three favorites?
Well, I love the one I did, not just because I did it, but I love the Dubai sequences, but probably not my favorite.
Okay.
To watch.
Okay.
I think maybe the last one was my favorite.
Okay. Fallout. All right.
What, he's got that great...
I like the first one.
He was going to say, the first one, he's got kind of a leather jacket in that one, right?
Yeah.
Over the sweater. Did you like
that
look?
Well, I didn't do it. I don't notice things.
I just didn't know, if you were a fan of that look at all, you know, when you saw it.
Well, I know it's like indelible in your mind, but I would need to look at it again to rank it.
When you watch movies, do you notice costumes a lot? Like, is that
of course.
You focus, zero in on that?
Of course. To the point where if it's a period movie and the costumes are not done correctly, it kind of takes me out of the movie. Because I take so much of what I'm shown as gospel. And if I'm looking at a movie that's, you know, 19th century and there's something that's 20th century by mistake,
yeah,
you know, or whatever, it kind of is so glaring to me that, you know, I don't know if it's intentional. And so, you know, it gives me pause.
Right. Feels wrong.
Yeah. Well, I kind of don't know that it's a mistake until, you know, I kind of assume that they're doing it for a reason.
Right.
Other than, you know, fallibility.
Right.
Do you know what your next project is?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
Well, I think by the time this comes out, the Skywalker Blu-ray will be out, so we can tell everybody to go get that. Love the Poe's scarf on that one. You like, you know, jacket's a little different. Poe's, Finn's jacket's a little different in Skywalker, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of great costumes.
His whole costume's a bit different.
But he has the leather coat on jacket. That's another leather coat.
Yep.
God damn, Michael Kaplan, you and your leather coats.
Yeah. Hose and leather pants.
Oh, he wears leather.
Oh, really?
Yes, I wanted him to be sexier and more swashbuckling.
Okay. I like that.
Oscar. Yeah, he looks great.
Yeah, Oscar's always sexy and swashbuckling.
I love Oscar. He's great.
Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast, is produced by Charles Hood. That's me, and Drew Taylor. Our supervising producer is Abby Smith. This episode was edited by Luke Burson, with music by Kevin Blumenfeld. The interview is a production of Bravo Echo 11 LLC, and the podcast is a production of Paramount Pictures. All rights are reserved. This message will self-destruct in 5 seconds.